Hi, my lovies. This is Christina with with Conversely Psychic LLC here on Universal Spirit Podcast. And today I have a guest, Mark Nakamp, who happens to be the author of the book Energy Work. Mark, could you introduce yourself and tell us all about yourself?
Sure, and thanks so much for having me. So basically, I'm Mark Nakamp. I usually give or take the junior. My father's no longer on this plane of existence, so it doesn't really matter at this point. But I've been a magical practitioner for over 25 years. I have a pretty diverse background. I started with hoodoo, actually, where I grew up in the south side of Chicago. It was the largest hoodoo candle maker in the Midwest, if not the country. And I first started learning hoodoo from an old African American gentleman named Goldfinger, who had one gold tooth. And also forgive my voice. I'm just getting over a sickness.
Comes with spring always, right?
Yeah, always. But Goldfinger was an amazing teacher. And that was kind of my gateway to magic. Now, from there, I studied some grimoires. I started studying Tibetan Buddhism, which has a lot of magical stuff in it. I studied a lot of Hinduism. I almost became a monk at the Hare Krishna Temple in Chicago. Let's see. From there, I found a coven when I started working at a pagan shop in downstate Illinois. And from there, I really went into like energy healing, Reiki, ceremonial magic, chaos magic, and even a little bit of like a root of the Norse stuff.
That sounds amazing. Like, so it's been a part of your life just from the beginning.
Just about. And I could even go back to when I was a kid. I could see spirits when I was a kid. My mom would always like, "Oh, there's nobody there." I'm like, "But mom, there's someone there." I mean, it was almost like that movie, The Sixth Sense, and like, "I see dead people." But it wasn't, I realized it wasn't just dead people, the departed I was seeing. It was like nature spirits or thought forms or various other entities. But my grandmother, she also had a bit of a magical gift. She would have prophetic dreams. So what she would wake up and she said, "Uh-oh, I dreamt a fish. Who's pregnant?" And that was like kind of one of her things. And it was always kind of funny, but that was something I grew up in.
So, would you consider them to be your imaginary friends, or did you feel like you were the head of the group, or it was just like, I have like these, I didn't have real friends, right? I have some friends that you can't see. Was it something that you were comfortable with, or was it something that, made you feel set apart?
It definitely made me feel set apart, and it was just something I kind of got used to. Also, it's really funny how the brain kind of copes with things. So I had a lot of when I was a kid, my second sight was amazing. Like I could see all sorts of stuff. Now as an adult, I see a lot less, but to compensate, I hear things better. I can feel things way better. I'm a very hands-on practitioner, literally in terms of energy. I'll tell you a quick story. I was doing an exorcism at a friend's house, and this particular friend, they were living in a home that used to be a funeral parlor. And they bought the house, and I said, I was talking to my friend, and I said, "Hey, you know what? You really want me to come clean that out, clean your house out for you?" They're like, no, we're fine, we're fine." I said, "Oh, okay, I'll talk to you soon." 6 months go by. 6 months go by, they get some paranormal investigators to go in. Paranormal investigators start stirring stuff up. I said, "Hey, do you want me to come in?" Like, "Oh, no, we're fine." Eventually, I get a call at 1 in the morning from my friend's wife saying, "I think there's a spirit attached to my husband. Can you come help me right now?" I said, "You know what? I'll see you tomorrow." Because I knew this was coming. And what happened was, because my sight's not as good, what I can do is I can sense where a spirit is very, very easily now. And I literally I literally took the hand of the spirit of this young departed woman, and I literally held her by the hand and escorted her to a portal to like where that energy was supposed to go.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing. So do you work with a lot of paranormal investigators, or are you your own paranormal
So
business?
that's actually a funny story, and you'll actually be the first person I tell publicly.
I'm interested. I love all that.
So about a month ago, I was thinking about the intersection of paranormal investigation and the occult, for the simple reason that I've seen so many people that are paranormal investigators, but they're not magical practitioners, and that the potential to open yourself up to something not so pleasant is very pressing. So I was thinking about, you know, but different podcast ideas, and I reached out to this group in England called Crime and Paranormal. And they're like really like good-hearted people. They're really nice people. They're energetic. They're really fun to talk to. And so I reached out to the leader of their group, who, believe it or not, is just 18 years old.
Wow.
And we had a conversation. I said, hey, you know, I'm a trained occultist. You've been training as a paranormal investigator. Let's kind of mix our, you know, let's add our skills together. So you're the first person, I'm actually telling this publicly, we're actually teaming up on their podcast, me and my associate Nicole. So we're gonna have like the American version of Crime and Paranormal. Then there's the British version of Crime and Paranormal. So it'll be a podcast, but I'll go in using the paranormal, standard paranormal investigation tools, but then I'm also gonna be able to use, like, you know, psychic abilities. Whatever's there, I'm going to do an exorcism, and I'm actually doing a class with my British counterparts on how to do what I do, so that they're trained and they can handle anything nasty on their end.
Yeah. Wow, that's big. That's big. Because I definitely want to get into your book, Energy Work, because one of my questions was going to be down the road about, you must know the secret as to why spirits like get stuck here, right? And
I do.
And they haunt us, right? And that
I
is
do,
the, that's the answer that I want. That's the question I want answered, because of all of my like experience, I'm just like, it's got to be something. I just can't figure out exactly what, right? So, I mean, obviously, right, got to keep on learning. So, like, let's talk about, you know, what prompted the book.
Sure.
And then we can trickle down to that answer, right? Trickle down to answering that question.
Sure, sure. So with the book, so, you know, obviously I've studied lots of different magical techniques and schools and modalities. And, you know, I've been initiated, of course, in like a few groups over the years. I don't like to name drop, and I don't title
That's
drop
fine.
Because there's no point to it at this point. But what's funny is looking at all the different schools of magic, I noticed that everything at the end of the day had an energetic result. So, for example, I can do long distance Reiki. And I noticed that if I did long distance Reiki on someone, it would have a very similar effect as if I did a candle for their healing. Like if I like put in the work to dress a candle and do healing magic for someone, it had pretty much the same effect. Okay.
Okay.
So I said, wow, that's pretty interesting. And then I was thinking about stuff such as, actually, I think I've told the story in the book. I was in the Southwest, and there was a friend of my mom's who was a victim of a magical attack. And of course, at first, I'm like, oh, are you sure you had a magical attack? And I kind of went through the symptoms. I said, well, are you feeling fatigue? Are you having weird accidents? Are people avoiding you? Are you having like any other negative things? You're like, oh yeah, I'm having all that. And she really went on to talk about the bad things happening to her. So I said, all right, I'll check you out. So I had her on a massage table, and I checked her out energetically. And then lo and behold, I found this thing that was kind of like a magical like bullet lodged in her. It was more like, it was probably about 18 inches long. had kind of a sharpish end to it and was lodged like in her aura, like pretty hardcore. And I removed it, very carefully, of course. And I talk about these techniques on how to remove such things in the book, of course, under advanced healing magic. And I removed this projectile, and I was able to do what I call energetic forensics, and I could figure out, what the person looked like who did it, why they did it, and all this other stuff. And because it used their energy, it was very simple for me to like kind of tap into it and then just do a return to sender on it. And I realized, of course, studying standard witchcraft practices, people do return to sender stuff all the time. I just did it very hands-on, but you can do literally the exact same thing, like with a candle or like a hoodoo uncrossing candle or something similar, And so it really got in my head, wow, everything is energy. And everything started clicking into place. And like my energy healing background and my ceremonial magic background. And I said, look, when I'm doing magic and ritual, I'm raising my energy and ritual. I'm manipulating energy. And it really comes down to energy. So I developed a practice that was more energy based. And that's what the book is. The book is like really a lot of my personal practice. But I realized there's a lot of, I'll say, quote, broke ass pagans out there, end quote. And I feel that really, really, really hardcore because I've been in some, not so happy financial places myself. And there's been times where I couldn't afford a candle to do a damn thing. So part of the reason of doing energy magic is not only looking at this kind of non-denominational approach, if you will, to magic, but also making magic approachable to the average person, regardless of financial circumstances, regardless of their education. And everything really starts off small and basic in the book, and it gets more and more complex. I mean, I go from making a simple energy ball to energy healing to, how to get possessed by a spirit or a deity. And I did this very much on purpose because when I was learning magic, I realized what made me a better practitioner than others is that I started off slow. My teacher started me off slow. And so I gained confidence, and one win built off the next win. And I wanted to do that for people reading my book. I wanted them to build confidence. And, if they're having a bad day and they're like, wow, my magic didn't work, well, then they can go to exercise one, make an energy ball, and say, look, I can still make an energy ball. It doesn't mean I'm a bad practitioner. It just means I'm just going to have to like refine what I'm doing. And I'm not saying everything I'm teaching works for everyone 100%. Because everyone's a little different. Now, I worked really hard to make things very approachable for everyone. But that being said, I'm just offering a set of tools, and I very much want everyone to experiment, and make them their own.
For sure. That's amazing because the truth is, like, even, when you were talking about everybody being in a different financial state, right? It'd be more like making it approachable and making it feasible for anyone, right? And I'm not gonna lie, like it kind of triggered like the teenager in me, because like all of us teenagers, we were all broke, right? We were all broke as teenagers, at least I don't know the average teenager. And it was more like I wanted answers as to like, how can I make good of a situation, without any like physical means, And I go back to my teenage years because I would say those were the years where I was the most negative. But at the same time, those are the years where we have the most, I guess, concentrated energy because we're looking to explore different things. And they always say, oh, you're out with the bad crowd or you're going in the wrong direction. But it's like when you're a teenager, you put so much force into whatever direction that you're in. You know what I mean? So yeah, it's really, it's possible that you can go down like the wrong path and stuff like that. And when you're in a position, right? When I was reading through it, I was like, man, where was this when I was 17 and I was like, on the borderline of depression? You know what I mean? Like when I could just turn that around energetically and understand that, my mind is like, can make a choice to then even harness that energy for something else rather than doing something destructive. The only reason I was also talking about my teenage years was also because I used to, okay, I can't get in trouble for it now because I'm 36, but I used to shoplift. Okay. I used to shoplift. Okay. All right. And it's my past. So I don't care what anyone says now.
Oh,
right.
Gotcha.
But I used to be like, you know what? I don't have the money, but if I had the money, this is what I would spend the money on. So how about we just forget about the money altogether and just energetically get the outcome of the thing that I want? Like, right, let's not shake a leg on the corner for some money. Let's just go, you know, just like dip some stuff in our pocket real quick. And I felt as though that was my mini way of manifesting the thing that I needed. I know it sounds so, like, I know it's ghetto. I know.
You're fine.
But, okay, but I thought that was like my first step to like spiritual alchemy, right? I was just kind of like, you know what? Don't even give me the cash. Just give me the car. You know, I'll work for you for about like, you know, 6 months. Just, I need a car to show up. Cause that would be much what my salary for, you know, would be for anyway, right? It's kind of like, cause if I get money, I might change my mind. I might forget. I might, you know, get distracted. You know what I mean? Like just knowing my energy is like, I might as well just wait for the 6 months and then receive the real thing I want. But then it's almost like it kind of opens up a secret door as into like, that's technically how manifestation works, right? In general, right? You're disciplined enough to stay focused for like the 6 months or even like what, the 7 day candles or the 21 day baths, right? Yeah. To manifest that disciplined energy. So my question for you is, how can your energy stay consistent to be disciplined enough? Because when you talk about outcomes in the beginning of the book, right, and distraction is very, very prevalent, especially if you live in the United States, okay? Distractions are everywhere. We got billboards everywhere. We got drama everywhere. How do you keep your energy consistently focused
for manifestation? That's a really, really good question. So, where to start? Well, excuse me. I guess let me start on a more mundane note. So if I showed you like my private files, you would see that I not only have a plan for like the rest of the year and like all the projects for the rest of the year, that I have literally mapped out all the books I'm going to write and all my projects, both nonfiction and fiction, because I'm working on some fiction as well. I have everything planned out, my goals, my education, what I'm writing, who I'm doing it with for the next 13 years.
Oh.
So if you said, just for fun, give me a year between now and the next 13 years.
My math. Give me
2029, I'll be working on my master's in psychology. I'll be working on the, so I'll tell you this. So Energy Magic is actually a trilogy. Surprise, surprise.
Ah.
And you're actually the first person to know this, you know, publicly. And so I'll be working on the third part of Energy Magic, which will be Energy Magic 3, Energy Rituals. So there'll be like personal group rituals with energy and expanding upon the ritual section in Energy Magic. Then I'll be working on a book on word magic and everything. It's called Word Magic, : Writing Spells, Bibliomancy, and Sacred Alphabets. Then I'll be working on a two-part series. The first part is how to make friends with angels and influence people. But in 2029, I'll be working on how to make friends with demons and master yourself.
Wow, I like that.
Then I'll be working on a book on neurodivergent magic, on how to do magic if you're neurodivergent and some of the thing. And not only if you're neurodivergent, but if you're teaching magic to people who are neurodivergent.
Yes.
Then I'm working on a book on pagan mysticism. And then I might be working on a book on constructing your personal spiritual path. There's another couple things I want to keep secret. But the other thing I can tell you is hopefully I'll be working on volume 3 of Voices of Our Pagan Elders. I'll talk about that in a minute. And then I've got another book in my young adult series I'm working on, three fiction books that are separate, and I might be working on a documentary. So,
really?
And that's in 2029.
Yeah, but still, oh my God, that's people don't even plan out their week like that. So
Yeah.
crazy. I like that though. And I definitely love the fact that you are catering to the neurodivergent style of learning,
For
which, you
sure.
know, as a collective and as a, you know, as a community, you know, or society, we are becoming more aware that there is, you know, a specific, not specific, but more like there is a separate group that just learns differently, or, you know,
Absolutely.
what is it? Ingest information, just not the mundane way, I guess, right? We've known this for forever, but it's almost as if like we as a society are now catering to that a lot more, and seeing that more in everything that we do, right? Like books, and you know, I'm even coming out with a tarot deck that is actually, you know, catering more to neurodivergent people who are attracted to certain types of art, and you know, they understand things differently. Please
Sure.
forgive me if I'm saying things wrong, but their level, you know, the level of understanding is kind of becoming our understanding too. And I believe it's opening up even practitioners to, you know, kind of like what you call the back rooms of magic.
Yes. I like
Right?
that.
Is it like there's other doors here too that lead to the same road, but you know, it's like it's all choice, right? So it's kind of like it gives more choice. I wouldn't consider it to be a distractant, and more like a, you know, more of an openness, you know,
Yeah.
and that I really love that you are, you know, very conscious of, you know, the changing ways of teaching, right? Because everything is always going to change, but that's very advanced and very very open of you to do.
Well, even with energy magic, you might notice, I mean, you've got a copy. You might notice that I try to make things approachable in terms of the senses, even. Like, I
Yes.
notice that, you know, like some people can see better, some people can hear better. I have noticed that almost everyone can touch. Like, touch seems to be like the one sense that everyone is kind of like neutral on. So a lot of the stuff is very literally hands-on, but you can, of course, add on your other senses. And I try to like use the senses at different layers when I'm talking about exercises or even concepts in magic.
Well, yeah, because you mentioned earlier that when you had first started seeing spirits, right, you said you could see them better when you were a kid,
Right.
and now it's like more you hear them more now as an adult,
And feel them.
right?
So.
Right, and feel them. So, I mean, did you drink the fluoride in school too?
I think I might have actually.
Yeah, because I think that has something to do with it. Right, the pineal gland suppression,
right.
right? So I'm just kind of like, I wonder if the people who didn't drink the fluoride could still see them. So, you know, just a thought, because you know, everybody and their mother is wondering, like, did that fluoride actually change something? I wonder how far along I would be now if I hadn't drank it. So, but
I'll actually
yes,
talk
I
about
did.
in the sequel to Energy Magic, I'll probably put some exercises like like a chakra workout, like kind of like work out a little bit more and things like that. So
It's like, is that why we get PTSD when we rinse Listerine, you know, when we're brushing our teeth? Like
I
we
don't know, maybe.
get that PTSD. We're just like, oh no, my memory's gonna get ripped erased. You know, so just saying, like, I just haven't noticed that they taste the same.
Oh yeah.
I used to see stuff too, and I'm just kind of like, it was there. I promise you, it was there, right? So, but yes, sorry, I didn't mean to like just go off
No,
the.
you're fine.
But yeah, that has been a really like jarring question for years. Okay, I just figured you were able to answer it. but just keep that in mind, people who are listening, that if you drink the fluoride, I'm pretty sure you'd be able to see more than you do. And if you still do, that's a very strong power you have. Just letting you know. I also wanted to get into, I think it was exercise 3 with grounding.
Yes.
I think that also includes what you were talking about the senses.
Yes.
And I was telling you earlier that my ego gets in the way of grounding, right? And we are on this lifelong journey to battle the ego.
Absolutely.
Because the grounding part makes me feel small, and I know that the ego is affecting my energy when I'm trying to do it.
Absolutely.
So I want to know what your thoughts are, and have you ever like had anybody encounter the same blockage?
Sure. Well, let me kind of go back to something else you asked about, because it kind of connects. You're talking about my energy. So in the book, there's exercises on cycling your energy between heaven and earth. And that's something that actually comes directly from my Reiki master, Sean Clark, who's no longer with us. And he was always very adamant about cycling your energy. And what that does is you're really, if I want to talk about magic in terms of this one major duality everyone talks about, everyone talks about this as above, so below.
So below, right.
But that means a couple different things. But what I want to stay relevant to, because speaking of neurodivergence, I have ADHD and I'll go in a rabbit hole if I'm not careful. But the relevant thing here is that there's the energy of the heavens of like pure spirit, and then there's the energy of manifestation, here on like the most concrete material plane. And instead of thinking of it as a duality, I encourage everyone to think of it more like a spectrum, just like there's a spectrum of light from like white light to dark. Similar way, you can see that in, of course, like the chakras in the Kabbalistic tree of life, even in the nine Norse realms. So there's this, we can talk about the spectrum between spirit and matter, right? Okay. So when we're cycling energy, we're really connecting to the universe in a very holistic manner. And as above, so below also means that, not to get all biblical, but that we are created in, quote, God's image. In that sense, we are the microcosm. We are reflections of the universe herself. So by cycling our energy, we mimic the process of creation. And this kind of goes into one of the major definitions of magic that I really like to talk about. That's not just the art of changing consciousness at will, like Pearlie would say, but it's about being co-creators with the universe. So by cycling, my energy, I'm connecting to the universe, and I'm staying not only grounded, but I'm staying centered in the fact that I'm this kind of intermediary between, and all of us are, between like spirit and matter, and that we have this place in this spectrum. Now, forgive my ADHD. What was the last question?
So how would ego get in the way
Ah.
of getting your energy to keeping it consistent?
Right. So the thing that we so I've had a lot of mystical experiences. So I'm talking about the spectrum between earth and heaven, and kind of going back to heaven and earth, right? So when we here we are on earth, you and I, and as we do different mystical practices or meditation or even magic, we have to get more and more spiritual, okay? And these experiences naturally act as a ladder. There's this very natural progression of energy that goes from earth to heaven. We can talk about this like in a chakra system. They talk about that all the time, that there's this energetic current, this current of liberation. Okay. So magical practice leads us there, and eventually we'll have these experiences of connection with spirits or connection with the gods, or to really go all the way to the top, connection with everything. And at the very top, and this is where you get like flashes of enlightenment. We're talking about like, what Buddha or Jesus experienced. I mean, everyone can do that. I mean, even Jesus said, hey, hold on. I'm cool, but all of you can do what I'm doing, and if not more so. So in that sense, we can all have those same mystical experiences. And I think we should in fact pursue them. Because when we get to the top of the mountain, metaphorically, there's no difference between you and me and the rivers and the air and Joe Biden and Donald Trump and the homeless person down the street and the witch who's stirring a cauldron. There's no difference between anyone when you get to those highest senses, because we're connecting to source and we all came from the same source. And when we have those experiences, we go back to that intrinsic connection. And isn't that what we're all really going for? That's why we all feel isolated sometimes. We always, all of us kind of feel, God, I wish I could go home to a home I've never gone home to. And what that is a spiritual longing. And that really plays out in that current of liberation. Now, the opposite of that is you get to the top of the mountain, can't live at the top of the mountain. Gods, do I wish I could live at the top of the mountain sometimes, but I can't.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, when I come going down, I'm going down the path of manifestation. Now, this is where we really talk about this. This current is really more used in the West, because let's say I have a mystical experience with God and I say, wow, how do I live my life knowing that everything's connected? And how do I live my life in the most, you know, godly manner? God, you know what? I think I'll get some stone tablets and write down my mystical experiences. Wait a minute, Moses. Slow down there, brother. And every religion, you'll have a mystic. Every religion is founded by someone who had a mystical experience, and they're trying to basically codify or, you know, write down those experiences in a way to share them in their descent from heaven to earth.
Okay.
So where this goes with ego, we all have, in cycling our energy, in grounding, in meditation, just in being good people, everything should lead us to, everything will lead us eventually to an experience of egolessness and ego death. The trick is to acknowledge them and then just keep on going, to put everything on the same playing field. You know, go ahead and be enlightened. Go ahead and talk to angels, talk to the dead, do some crazy magic to like save the world. And then you're going to have to do the dishes later. You're going to have to do the laundry. So we all have to like remember everything has to be on the same playing field eventually, energetically. There has to be balance and harmony.
No, I like that. I actually like that. I've never really thought of it that way. I never thought of it that way, because it's almost as if like spirit would seem superhuman, or then the human would seem like very small and, you know, what is it, unimportant, where it's like our brains are taught the opposite. We're taught that the physical is more important and the spirit is not that important. But it's like the spirit is always trying to like, you know, leave the body, like, no, we can do this, we can go here, we can do this, this, and that. And it's like, no, but I gotta iron these clothes. And you're just like, okay, that's fine, we can do that, right? But it's like, we also, right, we can speak to angels later. You know, we're not really alone, we just have to, you know, finish this test. I love how you put that, because now I have like, open up another back room to my spirituality. So now it's just kind of like, yes, yes, and not really fight anymore with self. So that above and so below thing really is a spectrum. Now I see it as a spectrum. Mm-hmm. Now that was a really good way of putting it. Slightly ungrateful, right? If I were to get my ego involved and keep me from, you know, really feeling and being present in the moment with what I'm trying to achieve, because I feel so small and I'm focusing on feeling small instead of the greater idea at hand, or the greater thing that I'm trying to achieve, right? Because ego is sneaky like that, right? Ego is kind of saying like, you know, you don't have to be doing this, like we're too good for this, or, you know, we're not small, we gotta go do something now to make ourselves feel like we're important. This not makes us feel important, you know. And it really is like that little red devil on your shoulder where it's kind of like, why are we doing this anyway? If you were such a good this and that, we wouldn't have to do this, you know, kind of thing. Like, you, that.
Well, I'd like to give you kind of like a different view on ego. So I'd like to more connect ego to survival instinct. So for example, if everything's in balance, your survival instinct and your instinct to help others and your instinct to like be spiritual, ideally those are all in balance. But our society doesn't teach us to have that balance. So our survival instinct, our animal brain kind of hijacks everything, whether it's, you know, you'll see people very greedy, but isn't greed just your animal brain telling you that you don't have enough?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really what ego is. It's identifying with the physical and having that natural instinct for survival just going way out of control and way out of proportion to the rest of one's life.
Okay. All right. I learned something new. I just thought that was just life. Right? They teach us that's just life, right? That's interesting too. I know. I'm 36. I'm like, I'm learning things that I should have known already. But I want to say though, like I said earlier, in regards to reading the book, I feel like I'm reading it with someone.
Yes.
Right? I feel like, there's a presence there as if the book itself is alive, right? Like I feel like, it's not like I'm not reading it. It's almost like it's physically speaking to me. Like it
Sure.
has its own life. Like what did you do to all these books, right? Did you like, put your hand on and pray on all of these books? Is that what you did? But just bless every
Not
single page.
quite. So what I did is, so long years and years ago, I used to be a professional tarot reader, and I no longer do readings for clients for various reasons. That could be a whole separate podcast episode.
Yes, it can.
But one time, a friend gave me the copy of Crowley's Thoth Tarot, the Thoth or Thoth, however you want to pronounce it. And I was doing a reading, and all of a sudden I heard this voice in the back of my head, clear as day, said, "You're doing it wrong." And I'm like, "What the heck is going on?" And I realized that Crowley had put a part of his energy into the cards, into the egregore of the cards. So just to give a quick magic lesson, anytime there's an object or as an organization or a ritual, it through repetition, it has its own energy. Okay. But these energies can also get semi-alive. And so these are like called egregores, but you can also create them on your own. And I talk about this in the book. You can create artificial spirits to do different things, and they're kind of
Yes.
like living spells.
Yes.
So keep that in mind. Now, the other thing I want to piggyback that onto is that we're very multidimensional. I do talk about this in the book as well, that we have a physical aspect, a energetic or astral aspect, which are really the same thing, which is some people might debate me with, but I'll happily debate you. Another part is your mental or consciousness. You have physical, energetic, mental or slash consciousness, and then and pure spirit. And these connect to different parts of the self, your physical body, your energetic body, your consciousness, and of course your soul. Okay. So there's a fourfold part of the self always. And that coordinates, of course, to a four-part aspect of the universe herself. Okay. So all that being said, what that really breaks down to is that we not only need to be aware of that, but question, did I put a part of myself in the book? So what I did was I literally put part of my energetic self, part of my astral self, I fractioned off a piece of it
Okay. Not a
into the
problem. Hold
book.
on. I think
So,
mine is I think mine is actually up too.
okay.
All right. I got you back.
Okay. So, as I was saying, with all that being said about the different parts of the self, as I was writing the book, I was taking a part of my energetic body and put it into the work itself. So you are literally having a conversation with me when you're reading the book. Now, if the book really works energetically the way it's supposed to, if you're actually having a problem or you have a question, the book actually will help you with things as well, because it's like a little mini me is in the books. Long story short, a piece of my energetic self was woven into the books as I wrote it.
Okay, yes. Okay, so yes. Yeah, so I do see that it is just as easy to talk to you just as it's easy to read the book too.
Exactly.
Okay, so yeah. Okay, good. Yeah. That's the authenticity that I would assume would be in a lot of magical books that I've read, but unfortunately, a lot of them were cliched, right? And a lot of them were very lackluster, and you kind of feel like you're just reading off a script. You're just like, I've heard this somewhere before. Why did this have to be another book? You know
Right.
what I mean? My
There's
other
some.
question to you, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay, I was going to ask you, when it comes to these times now, I would say, because mostly, you know, I would say the whole world at this point, you know, are we in like, you know, energetic jeopardy, right? Because we're all divided at this point, or do we look at it as all divided, or do we, are we see, should we be seeing this as a good thing, or is what is appearing to us just the face value of, you know, the negativity in the world happening? Now, I know I'm never going to ask anybody to get political ever, right? But when I, what I ask is like, could we be more conscious, right? To almost like shove this energy that we're having in the world into a more positive. And if so, like, how could we do that? Because many, I mentioned like these distractions, egos, and all those kinds of things. And I do know it's hard to get people to, you know, agree with each other or even get along with each other, right? But I know, like you said before, we're all connected. We're all on the same, you know, consciousness, so to speak, right? Or, and what would unify, you know, us as a collective, as a species, really? You know what I mean? Like, if we're just, if there was no money involved, right? If there was no, like, you know, having to survive stuff, you know, how would we get along just as a species energetically? I hope this wasn't too many questions for one question, right? Like, how could we all just get along energetically, right? Because I know you would have a snippet, if not more, of the answer. Because sure. I would always try to look for an answer for this.
Absolutely. So it's kind of funny. So I took a class, and this isn't going to surprise you. I took a couple classes on Islam a while ago, because I like to study the world's religions just as much as I like to study magic. And of course, every religion has a magical school to it.
Yes.
So I was studying a lot of Islamic magic at the time. Not just stuff with jinns, but, you know, like Quranic magic and some of the stuff from the region of the Middle East. It's actually called, what is it called? Like Rouhani, I believe. And there's a Rouhani school of magic. Anyway, the Quran says something really interesting, and which always stuck with me. And I can't remember the Arabic because my Arabic sucks. My Latin's a lot better, though. But the idea was, you can either take a step towards God or a step away from God. Those are the only two decisions.
Okay.
The only decision a human can make. And I thought about that for years, and it just kind of stuck in the back of my head. Kind of like a pet, like almost like the princess and the pea. This was like my pea that was bothering me. And I came to the realization after having several mystical experiences that once we have that connection to everything, we have a very, very simple choice that all at every action we do either is a step towards connecting towards the universe and each other or a step away. And so that's the way I look at it. Is I look at, how can I connect to people? How can I connect to the parts of myself? How can I connect to the gods? How can I connect to nature? And that's really what separates, you know, earth-centered spirituality and paganism and all the different like pagan spiritual paths from, you know, more the monotheistic ones. It's one, we don't really have this duality between heaven and earth. It's more pantheistic. It's more everything is God. Everything is holy. Everything is sacred. And as such, everything is connected. So I think, and this is why part of the reason I have like this mad 13-year plan to write, God, how many books is it now? I can tell you, it's just a lot. But in 13
I
years.
I've got about 7 so far.
in 13 years, I've got about 155 books or projects. And most of them are books. Some of them are plays, comic books, short story collections, fiction, things like that. But the majority are spiritual, and several of them are co-authored with people. And I'm co-authoring a lot of books because I want to lead by example. Because for example, I'm writing a book on mediumship with someone who's been a medium for several years and who's been part of like the spiritualist church. And I come at like mediumship and spirit communication more through an occult, you know, point of view.
Right.
And you know, everybody and their mom at this point has written a book on how to talk to the dead. Okay. It's not special anymore. And I'm not saying the people that have books out there aren't good. There's a lot of really good books out there that, gods, I wish I had when I was younger. But this goes back to the question too. I'm co-writing a book with someone who has a different perspective on mediumship, because their perspective plus mine makes our knowledge stronger together.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So I'm co-authoring a lot of different books over the years, not only to like fill in my gaps, but also to show that it doesn't have to be about me. I don't have to be the grand poobah of this branch of magic or this subject. You know, I can poke at somebody, I can annoy somebody, but if I take my five fingers together and make a fist, I can do some damage.
Right.
In the same way, the more nature teaches us so much, and nature teaches us that diversity is a strength. And the more diverse something is, the stronger it is, the more it'll survive, and the more viable it is. Okay. And even I would argue the more beautiful it is.
Yes.
So that be all that being said, I really want to take away ego from as much as possible from stuff I'm doing. And just to go on my soapbox, this is also why 10% of all my book royalties are donated to a nonprofit I created, with half of those going directly towards women, because I'll just be frank, I'm writing mostly towards the witchcraft market and the pagan market and the occult market, and the majority of people are women. So I felt kind of like a jerk if I'm not trying to give back to my audience.
Right.
Also, I'll just be frank, when I was younger, you know, I made some really bad relationship choices, and I don't want to talk about their side of the story, because that's their story to tell. But, you know, I did some things I'm not proud of. And so I'm trying to make amends. I'm trying to do better. I'm trying to apologize the best way I can. And so I'm giving half of my that. So I'm giving 10% to of my royalties to my nonprofit. Half of that directly goes to like the Medusa Fund, which is for like women's shelters and women's circles and things like that. Now, the other half is going to like a National Pagan Scholarship and, you know, a pagan suicide prevention line and things like that. But I really want to make the work I do, I want my legacy to be, we can succeed and thrive, be as egoless as possible, and still help each other. And we don't have to cannibalize each other. You know, like how many, I mean, I'm just going to go there. How many people you see on like pagan and occult groups who are like, can I give you a reading? You know, I'm trying to do a reading here, but there's a wider audience. Okay. And this is going to go back. We don't need to cannibalize each other. We can give our gifts to the more mainstream audience. And this is why I'm really thankful that magic is, and witchcraft are becoming more mainstream.
Now,
to kind of go back to the subject of like, how can we change the world and how can we balance everything out? The dirty little secret that everyone doesn't want to talk about is everybody can do magic. Okay.
Right.
So, you know, someone goes on a forum and you're on the internet and you make a comment, and, you know, some other person who's in a more negative headspace makes a comment, and you're like, wow, I feel kind of crappy after talking with this person who made a negative comment. Well, more than likely, you were magically attacked. Now, they didn't light a candle or like talk to some gods or demons or angels and said, you know, I hope Mark has a bad day. It was pure instinct. Okay.
Right.
Going back to what I said earlier in this podcast, everything has an energetic result. Everything has an energetic consequence. So that being said, almost every human being is doing random acts of magic by blind emotion and hurting themselves and in the world. I liken it to a pool. Like, you're in a pool with a group of kids. We're all kids, right? We're all children of the universe. So we're all kids in the pool, and the pool is our collective environment, our energetic environment. And you know what? There's just some people who just can't stop pissing in the damn pool.
Right.
Whether they're doing it on purpose, and they might be talking to you right in the face and pissing in the dang pool, and they're not even realizing they're pissing in the dang pool. And and that's why I want to make magic very accessible, because then someone could say, oh, Jesus, I've been pissing in the pool, and I'm really sorry. Let me make things better. Let me actually try to clean my mess up. Let me take some responsibility. But people can't take responsibility for things they don't know. That's not fair.
Right.
So that's why I want to make magic accessible. I want to, you know, I've got some book projects in the background. They're not even aimed at pagans or occultists. I'm aiming at the mainstream for the simple reason I want to like help them connect the dots, and I want them to like be more aware. And if we can be more aware spiritually, even on the basis sense that we're all spiritually connected, well, I'll die really happy because I'll know that at least one spiritual truth out of many, that one spiritual truth, if I can disseminate and popularize it, that might change the world a little bit. You know, if we, and the other thing is, kind of take it back to politics. I am completely fed up with politics. And
Yeah.
I'll tell you, and I'll just give you some background. So I'm biracial, and my black grandmother, her mom died when she was young, and her dad couldn't raise her for various reasons. So my little black grandmother, who's the sweetest person on the planet, she became the living housekeeper and babysitter for a Jewish family. Okay. So we got this like 15-year-old black girl in Chicago working for a Jewish family. And so as a result, growing up, like my grandmother basically raised me. I didn't know if I was getting collard greens and red beans and rice, or if I was getting matzo ball soup and potato pancakes. I had no damn
Right.
clue. Okay.
Right.
So she grew up very conservative. Okay. My mom was very liberal. And, you know, we grew up Catholic, and Catholics are typically more conservative. So I rebelled and I became very, very liberal. And even now, I'm more liberal than I go. I'm more liberal than anything, if I have to make a title. Now, all that being said, I have relatives. I have very few relatives. Most of my family's dead, but I have a few relatives that are more conservative. They're more you know, are more conservative than I am. And then I have friends who are very, very conservative. I have friends who are very, very liberal. And, you know, I've gone to protests. I protested war. I protested for women's rights. And I've protested for everything you can imagine. Okay. And I look at all these political debates. And at this point, my heart just breaks. Because what happens is every side is other the other. So, you know, as a liberal, you know, I want to go to the conservatives and say, well, you need to acknowledge this marginalized group in the name of democracy so that we can all be connected. Of course, you know, this connects to stuff like Black Lives Matter, or, you know, that trans rights matter and things like that. But I've noticed, and I've done it, and I'm not speaking from a high horse or an ivory tower. Please don't take me in the wrong way. What I notice in my personal life is in my effort to make conservatives more aware of liberal things that mattered, I have othered them. I have villainized them. I have made them the enemy. And as such, I have gone against my spiritual values that were all spiritually connected. So to kind of go back, liberals, conservatives, Democrats, Republicans, independents, whether you're black, green, red, whether you've got three husbands or two wives or 50 kids, I don't care. The point being that we're all connected, and that all of us on all sides have to quit thinking of us as just solely within our labels, within solely as our populations. We have to quit othering people, because if we other people, we've lost. We have already lost the battle if we view someone as our enemy. We have to view them as our brother and sister, or to be gender neutral, I apologize, we have to view them as our spiritual siblings. Because if we don't, we're only going to make the world a worse place. And this is the source of all these polarizations and why everything has gotten worse and worse over the years.
I totally agree with that. Not only that, I like how, you are very passionate and you're very authentic with your stand on this. You're authentic with the whole that we are just connected thing. So it's kind of like one loose screw affects the other half. Or one leaning to one side is going to mess up the other side, because it's all cause and effect. And you're passionate about it, is definitely reflected in your book for sure. That's why I said I feel like someone is just like reading with me. And I do get that sense in the way that it's written too. I could almost guess after listening to all that, that this was the book that you needed when you were, you know, on your, like the beginning of your journey. And I think that's amazing how you can write that way, whereas like you do have your, you know, your old self in mind, where it's kind of like, hey, it's not going to be all, you know, this, this and that. Let me show you something else, you know, before someone else makes that same, you know, mistake that I made, or, you know, I made, you know, personally, whatever, you know. And the fact that, you know, you do have this, you know, this positive outlook on us being, sorry, one, being one, right? To me, if more people were to read this book, it would be a very positive and very positively infectious. How about that? Right? It's kind of just like, it's kind of like, wow, we really are connected. That really does make a difference. You know, things that you don't think make a difference. When people show up to things, it makes a difference. When people don't show up to things, it makes a difference. It's like, if, like even something as small as that, like you don't show up to a job interview, well, you ain't getting that job. Okay? You do show up, it becomes 50-50 at that point, right? So exactly. You've now, you've moved the energy. You have had, you know, a footprint in that particular situation. And I do agree with you when, you know, people do try to other, you know, everybody else, because the truth is, like, I think spiritually, most people are unaware, right? I recently became aware of this a little over 10 years ago, that we are just spiritually holding hands with each other all the time. And our anger and even our love can be felt, you know, universally, you know, everything can be felt. So I believe that if we had more, what is it? Just control, right? And more understanding of our conscious choices on how to, you know, enforce that energy, it would in fact be very positively infectious. And we probably most likely, if not indefinitely, have the problems that we have today. You know, like this is very inspiring for the next generation, especially like you were saying that the, you know, paganism and Wiccan and, you know, the spiritual community is becoming more popular. It's becoming more mainstream, right? Because I'm going to tell you right now, like, it's going to take a while for it to get into schools, because they're talking about, you know, bring prayer back into schools. And, you know, I make those Facebook memes about kids sitting in a circle, you know, wearing black robes and stuff. Like, you mean everybody prays in school, right? But, you know, it is going to become a thing where, you know, maybe even 100 years from now, you know, someone is going to have someone, like 100 years from now, someone would have read your book, oh, right? And then they would have been like, you know, I'm now more conscious of my energy. So now I'm very aware of putting up certain boundaries of people who are not focused on being positive or focused on being, you know, progressive. I know I'm just like literally exhausting the whole thing. Okay. But, that's why I wanted to speak with you, because I cater to a younger audience as well, like upcoming people who are either experimenting with religion or, you know, on their way out of religion. And this happens mentally at a younger age, right? So that's why I always want to, you know, meet with people who, you know, have that I am speaking to my younger self type of energy. So any questions for me before, or did you want like a last statement of something, like something you wanted to say, before we, you know, wrap this up?
A couple things actually. So So the book is obviously available on like Amazon. The book is Energy Magic. Obviously, it's available on like Amazon and Barnes and Noble. And I'm actually going to do a marketing push to like a lot of different pagan and occult and spiritual stores to try to have them carry my book. Okay. That being said, if my book is not at a place that you regularly go to, I'm kind of speaking directly to your listeners. You know, let me know or let them know. If you go to my website, you know, it's marknicampjr.com/books. You know, I talk about how any local pagan, occult, or spiritual store can, you know, what wholesalers they can go through, make the book very accessible. So there's that. Also, I realized one of the people that I really admire in the occult community is Damien Eccles. Now, if you don't know, Damien Eccles was unjustly imprisoned for quote unquote being a Satanist, and he wasn't. He was. It's a whole long story, but I realized just a few weeks ago, like holy cow, I wrote a book on magic, on energy magic, and you don't have to use tools. Who else can't use tools? Prisoners. So if you know someone who's incarcerated, who's into magic and the occult, this is the best book for them. You can't get the book and send it to them. You have to like get their information and send it directly from Amazon. But if you can't afford it and you know someone in prison who could benefit from my book, let me know. Go to my website. My information is very accessible, and I'll personally send a copy to someone. So
that's amazing. I never thought of that. That is true. That's a great audience.
Also, to make the book even more accessible, you know, I've read so many books on paganism, magic, and the occult, and I've been very fortunate that I've gone to like a lot of conferences, and I've met a lot of my heroes. You know, I've met Oberon Zell. You know, Oberon did an endorsement for my book. And if you don't know who Oberon Zell is, research Oberon Zell. He is like the nicest, funkiest, unique person you ever meet. You know, I've met people like, you know, obviously like Selena Fox or, you know, like Dorothy Morrison. And, you know, I've met like all these people, and they're amazing, amazing people. And I love them to pieces. And I have nothing but love and respect for them. So all that being said, I have my book out, I want to be more approachable, because there's been times I just want to say, man, Dorothy, I love this book, but I had this question on page 35. I wish I could just pick up the phone and call Dorothy now. I'm not going to do that. Because Dorothy would be like, come on, Mark, you know, give me some forewarning. Or I'm not picking on her. I mean, just like anybody would, right? I mean, you don't want to. I'm crazy. I mean, if you want to call me randomly, I'll probably pick up the phone because I'm that person. But not everyone has different boundaries, right? And we got to respect everyone's boundaries. So to respect my boundaries, but to make myself accessible, I'm doing a book club for the book. So the first book club starts in June. That's going to take place on weeknights. The next book club is going to be on weekends. And so it's basically, we go by the book chapter by chapter. So if you go to my website, there's information on the book clubs. I have a paid Zoom account, so you don't have to pay anything. So just hop on the Zoom. The links for the Zoom are already on my website. So when the time comes, just come on the Zoom call, talk about the book. Now, of course, I want you to buy my book because, and I'm going to be frank, writing pagan books and occult books is not my sole source of income. My sole source of income is I do sales and marketing. So I have a mundane job. So I don't like need my book money, but, you know, one, money's nice. And so I want people to buy my book. And well, obviously 10% of my books, of my royalties, are going to, you know, charity to help the greater pagan and spiritual community. So buy the book for that. And I also believe in, you know, got to give energy for energy to some degree. But that being said, if you are a poor, quote, broke ass pagan, end quote, you can't afford my book, reach out to me. I'll work something out with you. Okay. And I want my book to be accessible. I want people to use these tools. A lot of the inspiration for this book was also, I know all this stuff. I want to get it out of my head so I could learn other stuff. So like a lot of my book projects, some of them are stuff that I know really, really well. Some of it is stuff I don't know that well, but I know enough to be dangerous. So in researching and writing and developing techniques for like a lot of my other book projects, it's almost like I'm taking like a master's level course in that subject. And the book is like my capstone project.
So, oh, okay.
So that in mind, I wrote this book just to get it out of my head so I can work on other stuff too and learn and grow on my own. And yeah, so come on the book, get the book. I'm very approachable. The book is very accessible. If anybody has any questions, just come reach out to me. I'm here for you. But a lot of these tools are stuff I developed and stuff I learned, and they really helped me unscrew my life and really helped me get on a better place. So I hope that I can do the same for someone else.
And that's amazing. And I definitely encourage everyone to purchase the book as well. I'm really enjoying it. As seasoned as I am, I'm still reading things that I didn't know. And it definitely keeps me more conscious about how I use my energy and how, you know, we keep it protected and safe. Just I would definitely recommend it. It's a good read. And like I said, I love the way it's written. I feel like someone is with me, you know, just really, you know, holding my hands mostly, right? Because when you're learning something new, that's what you need, right? So I definitely encourage you guys to definitely purchase the book as well. So I thank you, Mark, for coming on my podcast. I really appreciate it. It was very nice having you.
Thank you so much for having me. This has really been a pleasure, and I love the work that you do, and just keep on shining and keep on doing what you're doing, because you yourself are doing some really amazing work.
Thank you. I'm definitely trying. I'm not trying to stay in one lane. I'm trying to get hold hands with pretty much everyone. I want to know everybody's story, right? Because I'm not always likable, right? So, but I know the people that I picked to come on my podcast are a lot more likable than I am, and very, very, you know, very, you know, gifted at what they do and masters of their craft. All right. So again, this is Christina with Karma's Eye Psychic LLC here on Universal Spirit Podcast. Thank you, Mark, for being on today. And I will see you guys in the next episode. Okay.